actually blaming his father and others because they were not the ones who could invest on time. So do you think late 30s is something is a good age to be expecting still from your parents?
Of course, at the age of 30, one should become independent and should struggle for himself and try to earn his own living if that is the case. He should not expect from his parents. But of course, as far as this, the Islamic ruling goes there, that if one of them, either the parents or the son, is not capable of managing his own finances, then it is the responsibility of the other person to take care of. If the parents are poor and in need.
But the question here is for how long? For example, if there's a person in his 30s and he's still mismanaged, he's not able to earn for himself, he's not able to actually decide things for himself, he's not able to decide where the life is taking him, is it still the responsibility of his parents to take care of his needs?
Of course, if he is poor and in need and he cannot make a living of himself or for himself, then they should be able to sustain his life, sustain him, give him help him with the basic necessities of life. That is a responsibility.
But some parents actually stop over here with the thinking that my help could make him more lazy.
No, it can be conditioned.
All right.
You need to,
So you can actually help and sustain with conditions.
I mean, there should be a limit to it. But again, if a person is qualified as a faqir, as a person who is poor, is in need, and that is qualified and defined by the fact that a person does not have enough to make a year's living. Maybe he does not have a job which would guarantee him a year-long living, or he does not have enough capital to invest, or he does not have enough resources to make an earning, and he does not have an amount to sustain him for a year. He is considered to be a poor person in the view of Islamic Sharia, and a poor person is eligible to receive from the Baytul Mal.
All right.
But, for example, the Baytul Mal is not giving him the resources with the government are not enough. They're not giving him. Then if the father has enough resources, then he has to support his child. And he cannot give religious dues to his son.
Yeah.
And vice versa is also correct.
All right. We'll discuss more on this topic after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned with us.
The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam said, "Honor your children and teach them good manners."
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Naqavi, and Professor Naqavi is discussing something very important. Professor, you said that a child, when he grows adult, he should not be expecting much from his parents, but while something, even if his parents went somewhere wrong in the upbringing process, he should not be blaming now as he's adult now. He should be actually managing things, and he should actually be
He should be trying to maintain, to earn a living. He should not remain at home. He should not become a lazy person. He should not desist from lethargic activities or activities which are not fruitful. He should take advice and pay heed to the advice of people who are learned in this field. But till that time, he is able to stand up on his feet, and he's able to make a living for himself and his family. Maybe he has a family. He has to take care of the family. So they're not at fault, are they? So in that case, if a father has enough resources, then it is his responsibility to take care of that situation and help him out and assist him and provide him enough to sustain himself, but with the condition that he perseveres and he strives to reach a condition where he is becomes a bread earner himself.
All right.
So, of course, the responsibility, legal responsibility, Shari responsibility is there, but also, again, to an extent which makes him independent.
All right.
And that is the case with any poor person. We should be doing that.
All right. So do you think when this adult, when he grows up and starts blaming his parents, all right, my parents did not go well with me here, they should have brought me this way or that way, they should have taken care of this thing they did not take care of. Don't you think we as adults, when we start thinking this and blaming our parents, don't you think we actually ignored their conditions? Maybe they were not in a situation. Maybe they were not much educated. Maybe, like today, we have Islamic upbringing show and they did not have that time to get more educated and more learned.
Certainly. Now, shifting the blame to them, as I said, is not going to help him. If he's wasting his time doing this and always thinking about this, he can utilize that time for doing something positive and do something which will make him a bread earner, which will make him do things and think of things out of the box, maybe. And today technology is there, so much of technology is there, which is teaching us how to make an earning even by sitting at home. So we can earn even if we sit at home today. After the spell of corona that we had, mankind had for a few years, mankind developed and then started to earn while sitting at home. So this is a development which today our future generations, our children can learn from. And there are so many avenues opening up. So we need to learn things according to the changing times. And we can become bread earners sitting at home even. But if we start shifting the blame and thinking about this all the time, then how are we going to carry out positive activities?
All right, so that your suggestion is that the time you're taking to blame others, especially your parents, spend that time in some creativity, in some construction. Thank you so much, Professor, for being with us. The listeners, Professor said that until the verse in this Quran, which talks about do ihsan to your parents, be good to your parents, does not condition since they have been good to you or since they have brought you properly, you do ihsan to them. The verse does not condition this. So whatever the way they have brought you, whatever the way, whatever the mistakes they have done, this is not a correct expectation from you, that to be expecting as adult from them, they should have gone this way, they should have gone that way. Rather, you can ask from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to forgive them where they failed. Thank you so much for listening. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. an introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Journey Towards Perfection. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of Journey Towards Perfection in the Islamic lifestyle. When we talk about Journey Towards Perfection, it is known as a practice in a way that we want to gain reformation in a religious matter, which is generally known in Persian as Sayr al-Suluk, or we cannot say it is becoming a monk, but obviously it is a journey towards the self-reformation. And it is better to say this journey towards the self-reformation, which has been also mentioned in the books of the practical books of mysticism, which is known as Irfan-e Amali. So therefore, it is necessary that every single Muslim goes towards this. Why? Because he needs to reach to the level where he has reformed himself. And since Allah has created him potentially perfect, he has to practically become perfect. Therefore, it is necessary in the Islamic lifestyle that we must know about the halal and haram, we must know about the good and evil, and after that must go towards the self-reformation or self-purification through the ascesis, which is known as riyadha, basically. So therefore, it is necessary that in the Islamic lifestyle, we also have this important part of this important part in our life, so that when we are performing things, we do in line with the teachings that are being set by the Quran or the mystics who have gone through this path, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of Journey Towards Perfection in the Islamic lifestyle. Now, we said that this means that we must go towards a journey, we must practice in order to reach to the spiritual peace. And for that, we can see that in the world, there are some people who practice yoga, who practice different things. There are the discussions of black magic as Kabbalah in the Judaism, and in other religions we see different things. But none of them is taking human beings towards the spiritual peace, towards the perfection. Whereas Islam takes the human beings towards the perfection. The things that we do, we perform it with the intention of qurbatan ilallah, in order to get the nearness of God, nearness of Allah. And when we perform such things, there we are very much careful that we do not disobey Allah. And this is also one of the ways of performing the journey towards the perfection, or journey towards the purification. And this journey will take us to a level where Allah wants us to be, and that is the level of purified people. And that's why we see that Allah has made Ahlul Bayt and the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and his holy progeny as a role model for us, so that when we go towards this path, we get this nearness. And obviously, generally, the things that are said to perform is the love of God, the saying of the dhikr, having the tawassul, to wake up in the night, to avoid the doubts, to avoid the makruhat, unwanted things, and to perform the mustahabat and wajibat. So these are the ways in which we can, inshallah, get to the perfection. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
In the limelight.
After 4 months of intense negotiations, Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak could announce a Northern Ireland protocol deal on Monday, 27th of February, marking an end to a 2-year standoff with the European Union. We take a look at the British media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak is poised to announce a deal to end the protracted row over the post-Brexit Northern Ireland protocol as soon as Monday, 27th of February. The move would come after 4 months of intense negotiations and mark an end to a 2-year standoff with the European Union. But in a huge political gamble for the Prime Minister, it may trigger a fresh battle with pro-Brexit Conservative backbenchers in the European Research Group and the Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP. Tentatively said to have been named the Windsor Agreement, the deal would overhaul post-Brexit arrangements in Northern Ireland. Number 10 Downing Street hopes it will also pave the way for the re-establishment of an assembly in Stormont, given power sharing has been suspended since the Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP's first minister, resigned over the protocol in February of 2022. According to reports on Friday night, Ursula von der Leyen, the European Commission president, was scheduled to meet Britain's King Charles on Saturday as a final flourish in sealing the deal, but that was cancelled earlier in the day. MPs in the House of Commons have been put on a 3-line whip to attend Parliament on Monday, and Cabinet Ministers are braced for a potential conference call over the weekend. Discussions are still underway in Downing Street about inviting Ursula von der Leyen to the United Kingdom for a handshake to seal the deal. Von der Leyen and Rishi Sunak spoke on Friday afternoon, their third meeting in a week, fueling speculation that a deal was at the presentation stage. Number 10 Downing Street sources did not confirm whether a deal would be announced in the coming days, but stressed talks were continuing and that any discussion of timing was purely speculative. Earlier this week, prominent MPs in the European Research Group, including its deputy chair David Jones, warned that if Rishi Sunak's deal involved a tweak of the existing arrangements, it would amount to nothing more than a glossary on how to implement the protocol. The European Research Group has said it is in lockstep with the DUP, the Democratic Unionist Party, which has indicated it will not support the deal unless it ends the application of European Union law in Northern Ireland, which is the bedrock of the protocol and highly unlikely to happen. British government sources claimed the Prime Minister was relaxed about the threat of a backlash from the European Research Group and the DUP because he believes the deal would address all their concerns, including checks on goods and food produce entering Northern Ireland from Great Britain and the constitutional right to be treated the same as any other country within the United Kingdom on trade matters. The Northern Ireland Secretary, Chris Heaton-Harris, held an unscheduled meeting with the European Union's chief Brexit negotiator, Maros Šefčovič, on Thursday, according to one insider. They said Chris Heaton-Harris was determined to go for the face-to-face summit to reassure Brussels that the British government was fully aware of the European Research Group's anxieties and would be pressing ahead despite the backlash. This was a reassurance mission, not a rescue mission, the source said. Chris Heaton-Harris is seen as an experienced judge of the mood of the Conservative Party, having served as chief whip previously. But concerns at No. 10 Downing Street are growing that Boris Johnson, the former Prime Minister, could double down on the critical intervention he made about Rishi Sunak's handling of the Brexit negotiations last weekend. Sammy Wilson, the Democratic Unionist Party's Brexit spokesperson, said the former Prime Minister was helping the European Research Group and unionists ensure the Northern Ireland Protocol Bill, which would allow Britain to unilaterally rip up some Brexit arrangements for Northern Ireland, made it to the statute books. It was Boris Johnson who agreed the protocol deal in October of 2019 in order to bolster his chances at the December election with his claim of an oven-ready Brexit for the electorate. The bill is seen as a backdrop to ensure the protocol is overhauled, but it has been paused in the Parliament in the House of Commons since mid-October, where the European Union has pushed for it to be dropped. Sammy Wilson, the DUP's Brexit spokesperson, told the Chopper's Politics podcast that Boris Johnson had a duty to help because, after all, he was the person who got us into this situation. On Friday, the Foreign Secretary, James Cleverly, told Times Radio he hoped any deal, if it were sealed, would address the conditions laid down by the Democratic Unionist Party, the DUP. When hopefully we get those issues resolved, then I would hope that the DUP would recognise that we've addressed their concerns. And until we have addressed those concerns, we're not going to sign off on the deal, James Cleverly said. The comments signalled a reluctance by some in government to press ahead with the agreement with the DUP and risk rattling senior European Union figures. Those involved in the negotiations have tightly guarded the substance of the deal, but informed sources said it involved a carve-out for all goods that could be shown to be consumed within Northern Ireland. This would give suppliers to supermarkets, corner shops, canteens in hospitals and schools the right to trade as they did before Brexit, with no customs declaration or security and safety certificates. In order to enforce it, there would be hefty fines for any businesses caught smuggling non-compliant goods into Northern Ireland and then exporting them onwards to the EU. There is also expected to be a fudge on the role of the European Court of Justice, removing the EU's right to automatically go to the European Court of Justice in the event of a claimed infraction of EU law. The BBC has also covered the same story and tells us more. A deal on post-Brexit rules for Northern Ireland could be announced in the coming days, Britain and EU sources have indicated to the BBC. It comes after plans to sign off an agreement between the two sides earlier this week were delayed. Developments are said to be moving hour by hour, and a deal could still fail to materialise. No. 10 Downing Street told reporters earlier that intensive discussions with the European Union were ongoing. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has been trying to win support for changes to post-Brexit rules for Northern Ireland, known as the Northern Ireland Protocol. Rishi Sunak spoke to EU Commission President Ursula von der Leyen earlier. Downing Street said on Friday evening that Mr. Sunak had made good progress during the call, with a source saying it was positive and negotiations would continue with the leaders agreeing to discuss this further in the coming days. It is also understood that Rishi Sunak was meeting with a number of big food retailers. One major supermarket has told the BBC that it was their understanding that a deal has been reached. But the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak, wants the backing of retailers.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all of time.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم dear listeners welcome to the station where the youth
السلام.
Gather oh okay you're also a listener technically
yes yeah, of
you know?
Course
all right and that answer to salam is also wajib so you okay very smart
yeah
بسم الله النور
by the first verse of the Holy Quran
بسم الله
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Allah will bless you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Protect you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Help you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
So ask his blessings.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
His protection.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
His help.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Carrying on, you're welcome to another station. Where the youth gather, which is the youth station where we are today, again, we're going to talk a lot and you guys are going to listen a lot. You don't have a choice because it's just one way.
Yeah, there's no choice.
There is no choice. You have
and
to
the
listen.
Best way for you is to listen.
Yeah, you know, and trying to enjoy it, you know, like
yeah.
If there's torture.
I hope they enjoy that.
Exactly. You know, if you've been tortured, the way to deal with the torture is trying to acknowledge the fact that it's something very, well, pleasurable, you know?
Yeah.
Learn to tolerate it.
Nice way to put it, actually.
You know? Actually helps. For example, I might be depressed. I might want to, you know, let myself out.
Yeah. And bear your soul out for someone.
We all have
some moments
right.
In which we want to talk to someone.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say is someone might be a step away from suicide, right? Like, they might actually have, like, suicidal thoughts.
Wow, yeah.
Yeah.
Or making a wrong decision.
Actually, yeah. Have you seen, like, stories? You might have. You must have. Like, cop saves person or, like, talks suicidal man out of suicide.
Yeah.
Like, a child talks XYZ out of suicide. Like, that tells
someone's
us.
Wise word is going to save someone from a wrong decision and change their life upside down. Yeah.
Like,
I have
even
seen
like,
that
besides
a lot.
Huh?
I have seen that a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Or like they go, they're like, okay, what's wrong? They listen to the person.
Yeah.
They listen to the person who's about to end his own life.
Yeah.
And turns out that, well, he didn't want to end his own life, but he was just like forced by whatever pressure that he was feeling around himself.
They were just waiting for someone to listen to them sincerely and giving them perhaps a sympathetical sort of, I don't know, words or whatever.
Yeah. They needed empathy in their life. Like they needed people who understood them and understood their pain, right? That's only going to happen.
Listening is an art, you know?
It's not very easy to do.
Yeah, it's not very easy.
Yeah. Women
it's
must.
A skill, no, I guess. No, it's a skill.
Yeah, I was saying...
Feel at home.
I was saying that...
Women are good listeners, do you know?
Yeah. Women think so. Women are good listeners.
Yeah, they are good listeners.
Women are good talkers.
That is also another skill.
All right, okay.
That's also another skill.
Well, naturally, I've seen... I don't know why, though. Why is it that like, women have more sympathy?
Because they have a bigger heart. I would say.
Why is it that...
What else would it be? If it's not about the heart, what else would it be?
I don't know. Yeah, it is the heart, like, in terms of...
Or maybe it's something related to the abilities of the brain.
Emotions. which everything goes back to the brain, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, coming back to thing, yeah, often we mistake a lot of things that we see within people for something else, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Silence, for example. We see someone's very quiet. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, for someone being quiet, how can it be mistaken or misunderstood? Quiet, shy. Right? Yeah. I can look at a person who's quiet and say, oh, that's a shy person. I can see look at a quiet person and be like, he's arrogant.
Yeah.
You know?
You know? They're proud.
They're proud of themselves, right? So I can like define him as shy, proud.
And we think if we think there are a lot of more of these bad things to attach to them.
Yeah, exactly. Like you can go on and on and on
yeah.
about things that you can, you know, associate with a person who's a quiet person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, someone who has got a bit of sense or like who's got a positive approach to life would think that it's a wise person who's not like very talkative. But how I label someone is... it has got a lot to do with how I am myself, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
So if I am in a gathering or in a scenario where I'm very quiet and I see that I'm quiet because I...
because the people in there are not my type.
Oh, not my type. Or like, you know, I can't be bothered with these people. Like stuff like that. Yeah. If that's how I am... I see another quiet person, I'm like, that guy's arrogant. He thinks he's all that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because
yeah,
I'm like that. You know? If I'm quiet because I'm shy, then I'm going to label the person like, oh, he's an introvert, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But what we don't realize is I have no clue about that person.
Exactly.
I have no idea. That guy could be depressed. It could be anything, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that... I'm just one conversation away. I'm just, how are you away?
Yeah.
How are you
yeah,
doing
just
away?
For someone to break the ice.
Yeah, exactly, you know. And
yeah.
That could be actually a lifesaver, you know.
Mm-hmm. So. Just for a change of mood, let's go for a break.
Let's go for a break. Let's go.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So this is Youth Station. We're talking about listening being a good skill for people to share sympathy, empathy, whatever. Kindness.
Yeah. Like helping someone.
Yeah, helping someone. Is it really the best way to help people by listening?
Listening.
I would say...
Right, but listening has types, right?
Yeah,
for example, like,
yeah.
I'm listening to you, and I'm listening, I'm like, okay, if I listen to the person, it's going to make him feel better. Fair enough, okay, it might be true, but, like, listening is more about feeling. Like,
yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
If I'm listening to you, I need to feel what you're feeling right now.
Yeah.
So, like, so
because
I
because you
to...
can talk to the wall as well.
Precisely.
Yeah.
You know? So... it's more about having an open heart
yeah.
than having open ears. Because, you know... If
someone who could share feelings with you.
Right, okay.
Or maybe just sometimes having an eye contact that you know is filled with kindness.
Okay, yeah.
Gentility.
Yeah.
Something that would soothe your pains.
Yeah, yeah. And take like thinking about someone's problems as your own... Fair enough is going to put you under certain pressure, but if I'm not thinking of the whatever I'm being told as by this person that I'm listening to, right, as something of my own, concern of
yeah,
my
exactly,
own, a problem of
yes.
my own, then it's of very little help only listening. It is of help. It does
yeah.
help, right? But if I can't think, like, two brains are going to think more than one brain,
mm-hmm.
right? So... I might be able to, you know, like, think about the problems that the person has and, like, you know,
yeah.
guide
them. And tell
them
you something,
whatever.
Sometimes I am not talking to other people to hear them giving me advices, you know? Sometimes I just want someone to listen to me.
Yeah, yeah, I know.
Perhaps give me the care that I want to get.
Right. Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
So I see it many times among
people. But, like,
people.
You might even feel it, though. Like, if you're talking to someone, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's no advice, but like you might talk to people, two kind of people. One of the people, he actually listens to you. They actually listen to you, whatever, wholeheartedly.
Yeah.
They're listening to you, right? And they're feeling what you're saying.
Yeah.
And then there's a person who's just listening. Yeah. And that's it.
No, I'm telling you, the eyes are going to tell you a lot.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. Like, without a word, you can tell.
Yeah, without a word.
And it has a difference, doesn't it?
Yes, of course. Yes. Mm. Just like when you talk about your problems with your parents, you know, especially with your mom.
Mm.
Because sometimes she can't do a thing for you. But still, when you see that kindness in her eyes, because, you know, the eyes are the window to the heart, then when you see it, you feel so much relieved, though she has done nothing to you. She has said nothing. But you feel that you have been a lot more better than before you talked to your mother.
Yeah, you feel the problems have been lifted off your shoulders.
And it happens to when you talk to your close friends. That's the same thing as well.
Yeah.
So before we go for the final part, let's go for a short break.
Welcome back.
Yeah, welcome back.
I'm going to welcome you back. Right, so...
So as human beings, we in our life would have too much of problems. We would have too much of terrible situations. We would want to share those moments, those sadness, those burdens with other people.
Yeah. Like if I'm talking about my problems only and everyone's talking about their problems.
Yeah.
And there's no one to listen to.
Yeah. What would happen
then? Would happen, you know? And actually, it's very recommended. The Prophet Adam alayhi salatu wasalam, he had a lot of grandchildren, like a lot of children. And they were running around, they were old, young, you know, like all kinds, all sorts of ages, whatever. A lot of them. So they were they used to run around, play, make noise, whatever. And a few of them, they came to him and they said, you know, like, we make a lot of noise, we talk, we run, whatever we do, right? We're very active and, well, you don't, neither do you participate, right? And you're just there, and you're just quiet, and, you know, you don't talk much, whatever, all that. The Prophet said that, well, Jibreel came to me, the archangel, and he said to me that if you want to return to the place that you were in, فَأَقْلِلْ كَلَامِكَ, if you want to be where you were, which was like that station of...
talk
that
less.
Divine, yeah. Reduce your speech. Reduce your speech, right? Certainly has an effect. Cut your words short.
Yeah
precisely. It has a lot of effect. One, you might realize, everyone might. Like, I'm sure every single person has had one of those days. Right.
Of course.
We're not talking about like years or months. One of those days that you don't want to talk much.
Exactly.
Right? Or like a few hours. You've got this vibe that you're in. You don't want to talk.
Yeah.
And you just want to stay quiet.
I want to stay in my shell.
Yeah, exactly.
All alone.
All alone. Yeah, exactly. Everyone goes through
that. Of course,
Yeah. But what we realize, if we pay attention, is that at that time, I am... looking into myself now. Like, I'm not in the exterior realm anymore. Because, like, I'm within my thoughts.
I'm alone somewhere with my own self.
Your own self. What does that do? That helps you understand yourself.
Yeah.
Helps you understand your issues, what you have.
Like,
helps you think about the problems that you have. And helps you understand the human being more. Like, if you can understand yourself, after all, you're a human being,
you could share some sympathy with others.
Others, yeah, exactly. So you understand the human nature a bit more. Like,
exactly.
When you talk less.
Yeah.
Which is going to help other people when they're talking
to you. Of course, yeah. So we said that. Listening to other people is a skill, and it's going to help other people from doing wrong things sometimes. Sometimes you would act as a savior. And also... you rightly put it that sometimes the best thing is not just to say our pains or problems, we can go through some special personal, search and find ourselves better and better and understand it, because then in that way we're going to share more of sympathy and empathy with other people and understand them as well. So, and that's the gist, I guess. So, this is all for today's episode. Until another session, I bid you farewell. May Allah protect you and shower you with His blessings. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
On Friday, February 25th, 1994, the 15th day of the holy Muslim fasting month of Ramadan, the Jewish terrorist settler Baruch Goldstein broke into the Ibrahimi Mosque, also known as Cave of the Patriarchs, because it includes shrines and tomb of prophets, located in the southern West Bank city of Al-Khalil, as Muslims were performing the dawn prayers on a Ramadan day and opened fire on the worshippers, killing 29 on the spot before he was neutralized by the worshippers. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. Wafa News Agency wrote in this regard, February 25th marks the 29th anniversary of the Ibrahimi Mosque massacre, which resulted in the death of 29 Palestinian worshippers and the injury of 150 others. Yet, 29 years later, the victims are still paying the price for the massacre. On Friday, February 25th, 1994, the 15th day of the holy month of Ramadan, the Jewish Zionist and terrorist settler Baruch Goldstein broke into the Ibrahimi Mosque, located in the southern West Bank city of Al-Khalil, as Muslims were performing the dawn prayers on a Ramadan day and opened fire on the worshippers, killing 29 on the spot. The Zionist regime occupation troops present in the area closed the gates of the mosque to prevent the worshippers from leaving, and they also prevented those coming from outside from entering it to help the wounded. But the 29 were not the only victims of that massacre. That same day, the Zionist regime occupation troops opened fire at Palestinians participating in the funerals of the dead, killing 21 more people. With tension escalating in the occupied territories, the Zionist regime troops opened fire at protesters the next day, killing 10 more and wounding hundreds of others. Following the massacre, the Zionist regime occupation forces closed the Ibrahimi Mosque and Al-Khalil's old city for a full 6 months, claiming to investigate their crime. They unilaterally formed the Shamgar Commission to investigate the massacre and its causes, which came out at the time with several recommendations, all against the victims and favoring the Zionist terrorist settlers. The recommendations included dividing the Ibrahimi Mosque between Muslims and Jews, creating new facts on the ground that worsened living conditions for the area's Palestinian residents, tightened security around the Holy Mosque, giving the occupation authorities full control over the mosque in order to continue to turn into a Jewish shrine, and preventing the call to prayer from its minarets many times during the year, as well as closing it for Muslim worshipping many times in the year while opening it fully for only Jewish worship. Shortly after, the occupation authorities placed cameras and electronic gates at all entrances leading to the mosque area, closed most of the roads leading to it to Muslims, with the exception of one gate, with strict military measures, closed the popular vegetable market, the Al-Khalil and Shahin Khans, and Al-Shuhada and Al-Sahla streets. With these measures, the old town was separated from its surroundings, measures that are still in place today and are even harsher. Their impact on the life of thousands of Palestinians who live in that area is very visible to anyone who goes there. The terrorist Baruch Goldstein, whose real name was Benjamin Goldstein, was 42 years old when he committed the massacre. He was one of the founders of the Jewish terrorist Kach movement. Goldstein was born in New York into an ultra-Orthodox Jewish family, and he got his education at the Jewish yeshiva schools in Brooklyn and got a degree in medicine from the Albert Einstein College of Medicine at Yeshiva University. He came to Palestine from the United States in 1980 and lived in Karat Arba settlement built on usurped Al-Khalil lands and houses the most extreme and racist settlers in the Palestinian occupied territories. According to Press TV, Al-Khalil is the biggest city in the West Bank and home to more than 200,000 Palestinians. About 1,000 Zionist settlers who engage in frequent attacks on Palestinians also live there under heavy military protection. Al-Khalil has seen regular unrest, and the Ibrahimi Mosque, believed to be the burial site of prophets including Abraham, is the focal point of tensions. In 1994, Zionist settler Baruch Goldstein killed 29 Palestinian Muslim worshippers inside the mosque with an assault rifle before being beaten to death by survivors.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود غده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Men and women, as human beings, are completely equal in Islam. This is part of a speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with hundreds of prominent Iranian women in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniyah on January 4th, 2023. I've repeated this on numerous occasions during the Eid al-Fitr prayers in the Eid al-Fitr sermon, or in the ceremonies that are held in the month of Ramadan. And there were women who were covered in different ways in these ceremonies and were shedding tears. I envy them for shedding tears like that. I tell myself that I wish I could shed tears like that girl or that young woman. How can you make accusations against such a person? Yes, not observing the hijab properly or having inadequate form of hijab is not the right thing to do, but this does not mean that we should exclude these individuals from religion and the revolution and consider them to be outsiders. Why should we do such a thing? We all have certain flaws that we need to correct. The more flaws we correct, the better. This was another issue that had to do with the subject of hijab. One issue that I don't have time to talk about, unfortunately, is the service that the Islamic Republic has provided to women. This should not be forgotten.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
I don't think any of you have seen the period before the revolution. I have spent almost half of my life in the period before the revolution. In the pre-revolution period, there were very few women who were wise, intelligent, educated scholars, researchers and experts in various fields. There are all these female university professors, all these female specialists and consultants in the medical sciences, and all these research scientists in different departments. When I say different departments, there are places that I have actually visited and seen for myself. Intelligent female scientists are working in advanced scientific and technological areas. Such a thing did not exist before the revolution. This is an outcome of the revolution. We have all these female university students. In some years, the statistics have shown that there were more female students than male students. There is much meaning in this. There is all this intense desire to study and gain knowledge.
Allah, I want to thank you. That you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahan Abbott, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
The streets of the Yemeni capital were poured with a huge number of Yemeni protesters who came out to express support for Yemen's late president, Saleh al-Sammad. Saleh al-Sammad was assassinated by the Saudi-led coalition back in 2018. He is hailed here as Yemen's martyred president.
We came out today to express solidarity and loyalty to the martyred president who sacrificed his life on the path of Allah. And we say to the killers of al-Sammad, your criminal and reckless atrocities has given new life to a nation. The Yemeni people will accept nothing but the just punishment against the perpetrators.
Protesters also express solidarity with Palestinians who are suffering from Israeli regime attacks and crackdowns. Yemen's main cause is the Palestinian cause, according to government officials who addressed the crowd at the rally.
To the Palestinian people, we say, your blood is our blood, and our blood is your blood. Every drop of blood that is spilled in the land of Palestine is a drop of blood being spilled here in Yemen. Any oppression Palestinians face is considered oppression that is happening to us and every honorable Muslim.
The Palestinian cause will always remain dear and deep in the hearts and souls of the Yemeni people.
The latest protest in Sana'a comes in the midst of ongoing political efforts by the UN Special Envoy to Yemen to reach a deal between the Yemeni government and the Saudi-led coalition to end the conflict. Even if the war comes to an end, the Ansarullah-backed Yemeni government will continue to face many challenges from world powers, given its unequivocal support for Palestine.
Despite 8 years of war and a strangling blockade that has stirred Yemen into becoming the world's worst humanitarian crisis, tens of thousands of Yemenis remain defiant and showing support for the Palestinians who remain occupied by the Israeli regime. Yusuf Mawri, Sana'a.
Stop that war! Stop that war!
Thousands of kilometers away from the front lines of the Russia-Ukraine war, an appeal for peace from central London.
But today's protest means that while there may be consensus at the official political level here in Britain and other European countries, anti-war sentiment among ordinary people is on the rise.
Years before the conflict began, anti-war campaigners had warned of the consequences of a NATO expansion to countries that share borders with Russia. Their warnings were ignored.
The calls for it to go on and on, which is what all the governments are talking about now, is really a call for more of this and for an escalation of the war with the possible threat of nuclear war.
Но нигде.
That threat became more real last week after Russian President Vladimir Putin announced his country was halting its participation in a nuclear arms reduction treaty with the U.S. A response to U.S.-led NATO nations sending tanks and other armaments to Ukraine. Wars come at a cost, and it's not just the Ukrainians and the Russians impacted by this one. The ripple effects of what's happening on the battlefield have already washed up on European shores.
We are seeing an impact on fuel bills. We are seeing an impact on food prices. But I think also there is a growing cynicism that there's no money to pay nurses a decent pay rise. There's no money for the National Health Service, but the British government seems to have endless coffers of money to provide arms for Ukraine.
After a year of war that's seen tens of thousands killed, tens of millions displaced, and entire cities destroyed, will this renewed call for peace make a difference? Saeed Pourreza, London.
At one of Lebanon's local supermarkets, only a few items cost a bundle of Lebanese pounds. The country's cost of living crisis is taking a heavy toll on people, as 80,000 lira equal only $1.
As Lebanon enters a third year of a deepening economic crisis, basic necessities like food and medicine have become more expensive than ever before. It has become almost a daily struggle for some families to put food on the table.
The Western sanctions on the one hand and domestic corruption on the other hand have been affecting the situation, and it is the people who are suffering.
Many blame those in power for heeding to U.S. and Western control of monetary activity. People on the street say the increasing rate of the dollar is a major contributor to the crisis.
If the dollar became high, one